is The Fantasy Show with Shoali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Shoali, Matt Marchese with you. Week 10 has arrived. Another early morning game overseas, this time in Germany instead of England, and all the other games getting ready for 1 p.m. Eastern. We're here as usual for all of your injury news notes. Start sits for every game. Of course, the top of the next hour, your questions on the People's text line at 590-590. Name and location, please. You can tweet us as well at SNS Alley with two L's, at MattyMar89, at The Fantasy Show. I guess you can do that for as long as Twitter is around. I don't know how long that's going to be, at least. But the text line is always open at 590-590, and I'll try and prioritize the questions that involve either the Seahawks or the Buccaneers, since that's the early morning game in Munich. And Matt, you know, I've heard that Germany has a pretty rabid fan base when it comes to American football, like more than most other American sports, all things considered. Like, have you liked these international games? I'm genuinely curious to see what the crowd looks like in Munich, but I actually have heard it gets pretty crazy for American football over there.
As we get football all day. My wife hates it because we get football all day. That's usually how it works in this house. It's an interesting concept. I think to do it, you know, you have the London games, you have the Germany games, and you look at the success that they've had doing these games, and that's all fine and dandy, but I think the thought initially was, can we do this full time? Can we have a team in Europe full time to really expand, you know, our reach as a league? And I just don't see how that's possible. Like if you think about, you know, a flight from the eastern part of North America, let's say it's Toronto, let's say it's New York, whatever the case may be, you're talking like a 6 to 8 hour flight, depending on weather. Ooh. To get to a place like Germany. What happens if they got to go play LA? Tack on another 5. So now we're talking about an 11 hour flight to get to play. Like, I just don't see the value in that. I think the PA would be totally against that. And to have players go live in Europe, like, I don't know what the appetite for that would be. To do it every once in a while is fine. I'm curious, and this is more of like a nerdy brain thing, I'm curious to see how they split the revenue for this, because it is one team's home game.
Right.
How do they do that? Like, is it just the home team that says, we're going to sacrifice a home date, but we get all the revenue from this? I wonder how that works. But anyway, yes, it's football all day. So very happy about that. And can't help but think about the legendary Frankfurt Galaxy of NFL Europe, 4-time champions. I mean, if that doesn't scream football, I don't know. American football, I don't know what does.
I mean, I say this as I wear my XFL Tampa Bay Vipers hat, like, right now. But I wonder if you can buy, like, Frankfurt Galaxy merch. You know what I mean? Like, if you went on eBay, I wonder if you could find, like, Galaxy merch online. I wonder if it'd be too confused with, like, LA Galaxy merch, because the LA Galaxy and the MLS are, like, I don't know, like, they're reasonably popular, I suppose, for an MLS franchise, right? But I genuinely wonder. It's just funny. You mentioned the revenue thing, actually. Isn't that kind of sort of part of the reason why that Bills and Toronto series kind of went away? Remember that whole thing? Oh, man. I went to a couple of those games when they were happening here at the Rogers Center. And ooh, those were not fun
horrible
experiences. Oh, my God.
It was horrible. And I'm a Bills fan, and it was horrible.
Yeah, it was awful.
And based on your question, I am finding Frankfurt Galaxy stuff. Yeah.
Like, is it expensive?
I see something like $24.99 US. I see 30 euros. I mean, so it's probably what you would expect. Something on Redbubble, $26.81, probably US. So, I mean, yeah, it's around. I'm sure you can find it. I think, honestly, Sho, you can find anything on the internet now.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I remember when the pandemic first happened, and when sports, like, a couple of months after, and sports started to come back. I don't know if you remember, like, one of the two sports that returned the first, I believe, like, in the world, not just in North America, but in the world, was KBO baseball in Korea, and then the Bundesliga soccer out there in Germany. Yep. And
So I remember like Blair, and he was still doing like the Barker's Bundesliga picks and so on at the time. And I was doing shows with Andy, and I remember we did we randomly picked at the beginning of the KBO season one team to win, and we ended up picking the NC Dinos for no other reason than I loved the logo. I thought the logo and the colors were fantastic. And not only did they win the KBO in the end, like they won the equivalent of the KBO World Series. I don't know if you've seen this, the KBO's trophy for what they like to like, you know, instead of like a commissioner's trophy with the flags on it and so on, the KBO trophy is, I'm not kidding, a giant sword. Like a giant, like massive, like human-sized
sword. I'm looking at it now.
Sword.
It's amazing.
It's the coolest thing. Like, don't get me wrong. Do I think the Lombardi trophy is pretty, like, timeless looking? Sure. Do I think the World Series trophy is fine? Yeah, I think it's fine. The Larry O'B. Like, pretty much every trophy but the Stanley Cup is just fine, essentially, right? Stanley Cup is a timeless classic, but... boy, what I wouldn't give to see like Tom Brady win the Super Bowl and then lift a sword above his head. Oh boy, I want to see something like that.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it now, and it's pretty legit. Like it's it's massive, this thing. Like it is not like, it's not a dagger. No. How about that? It is a sword, like an actual massive sword.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Incredible. It's that would be great for my Halloween costume.
You just have to win the KBO. You can just go sign over there.
Which isn't happening.
Yeah, I don't.
Which isn't happening. Never been accused of being a baseball star.
Okay, let's get to our first segment of the fantasy show here on this Sunday morning.
Do we have to?
We have to.
Do we have to talk about the Thursday nighter?
Man, I'll tell you this. I will freely admit, hand up, Matt, that I did not watch this whole game. Mainly because I watched like the first like half of the game, maybe like first quarter, maybe a bit of the second quarter, and then I went to go see Black Panther 2 in theaters. So I ended up I just was like, you know what? I don't have time for this. I'm going to go get dinner, and I'm going to go see this movie. And you know what? From what I can tell, that was a more enjoyable, like, 2.5 hours than it was to watch the Falcons at Panthers game. I remember after the game, I went and watched the highlights and so on, and oh my gosh. Like, the Falcons are 4-6. They are in second place in the division, and they lost that game. The Panthers win 25-15. They're 3-7. The Buccaneers are 4-5, and if they win this morning in Germany, they'll be 5-5 and will lead the NFC South. That is just an awful division. I'm not sure anyone wants to actually win it, but I guess someone will. But I think something tells me, Matt, that the other three teams will not be making the playoffs from that division.
What a disaster. Honestly, like that is eerily reminiscent of that 7-9 Seahawks team.
Oh yeah,
that ended up making the playoffs, and that was the Marshawn Lynch
beastquake,
yeah, against the New Orleans Saints. It was that year. But the thing is that at least that team had some spunk. These other teams are just god awful right now, and the only bright spot in that game was Deonta Foreman, who's proven. I know he had a bad week last week, but what a pickup that was for anybody down the stretch here. And we had talked about Deonta Foreman as a waiver pickup as opposed to Chuba Hubbard, just because Deonta Foreman, when he took over from Derrick Henry, when Derrick Henry got hurt last year and he was given the reins as the lead back for the Tennessee Titans, he was excellent last year. And I believe, and obviously this week changes that, but Deonta Foreman, in terms of points per game over the last 4 weeks, is like a top five running back. And that was with a bad week last week. So he's one of those. And this is why you have to listen to our waiver wire show, because every Tuesday it drops. Don't you dare miss it, because it's the waiver wire that you end up finding these gems, right? Sometimes it happens. There are some times where you pick up a guy that a lot is expected from, and it doesn't pan out. But on the chance that you pick up a guy and he ends up being really good, he can be a league winner like Deonta Foreman is. And he's going to be, because clearly, and I know the weather had something to do with it, but they do not want PJ Walker throwing the ball 32 times a game. I think that's pretty safe to say. And they're just going to run the hell out of the ball. And it looks like Deonta Foreman's backfield. So he was excellent. Marcus Mariota sucks. The way they use Kyle Pitts is still criminal. Drake London ended up having a decent game just because he caught a touchdown. Yeah. But that offense in general, like, can we highlight the fact that Tyler Algier, we're getting it right this time.
Yeah.
Had minus 17 receiving yards in that game. That, you know how hard that is to do, Show? That's really hard to do in the NFL, in the passing league. I guess it's not hard when Marcus Mariota's your quarterback, when he throws like the spin-a-rooney pass, which Ooh. We saw, which Ooh. Was the, it was so horrible.
A 360 no look, like kind of like horizontal across his body pass. Like he's got this guy been
might as well have thrown it left-handed.
Oh, yeah, come on, man.
So it was a disaster. And those two teams, like I said, outside of, I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson didn't have a good game, but outside of Cordarrelle Patterson and Deonta Foreman, you're not starting anybody else with confidence. And it's a shame because there's a lot of talent on these teams. It's just they don't know how to use it. And like I tweeted out, and it was obviously in jest, I was so exhilarated by DJ Moore and Kyle Pitts blocking all night. Did you? I don't know if you saw you didn't because you said you were watching Black Panther 2, which I'm sure was great.
It was great.
It was 4th and 10, and Atlanta needed to convert, and they brought in Kyle Pitts as an extra blocker. Can we fire Arthur Smith into the sun, please? Kyle Pitts as an extra blocker on 4th and 10. Your most dynamic pass catcher is blocking when you need 10 yards. Somebody please explain this madness to me, because I'm the clown that keeps playing Kyle Pitts every week, because I know the week that I don't play him, which has been twice, he's caught touchdowns. And I'm the sucker. So I'm the reason why Kyle Pitts isn't putting up fantasy.
I was going to say, like, can you let me know whenever you choose not to play Kyle Pitts and I can put him in my lineup for that week? Thank you. That'd be...
Yeah, I'm the clown. I am the clown.
That'd be very helpful. Yeah, 2 catches for 28 yards. You know, it's funny. When I, for Kyle Pitts, when I got out of the movie theater, I was like, it was really late. It was like 2:30 in the morning or something. So the game had been over for quite some time. And the first thing I did, I had a couple bets on this game, and then obviously I had, I actually did have Cordarrelle Patterson starting in one league, and I had Foreman starting in another league. So the dichotomy of fantasy football in those two leagues right there, right? But I got out of my phone, I quickly, the credits were playing, so I'm waiting for the after credits scene like you do for Marvel movies. And there I was, I refreshed my phone, and the guy sitting next to me, he was like, hey, do you know how, like, I think he saw me open the app and let me check the scores. And he was like, hey, did the Panthers win? And I was like, oh, yeah, yes, they did.
Wow,
sir.
They did.
Good for, if you're a Panthers fan and that if you're that guy, congratulations. Hope you were happy that they beat the Falcons by double digits, no less. DJ Moore, though, I got to ask you before we move on from this. We talked a little bit about Deonta Foreman. Like you said, 31 carries for 130 yards and a touchdown. He had, I believe he was targeted once, but he did not have a reception because he had no yards. But I think he was targeted once. But DJ Moore, though, 4 catches for 29 yards. That's obviously a terrible stat line no matter what league you're in, standard, half PPR, full PPR. But I just, like, you probably drafted DJ Moore, maybe not super highly, but probably, if I had to guess, like in the top, like what? 6-7 rounds, probably. He was probably drafted somewhere in there, if I had to guess, right? Maybe the 8th round, depending on your league. But I have a feeling he was probably drafted a little higher than that anyways. But DJ Moore, I don't think he has been a bust, or maybe the biggest bust this season, because that's probably been...
Najee Harris.
Yeah, like Najee Harris, Keenan Allen, Jonathan Taylor. Like, for given where they have been drafted and how much they have played, or how much they haven't played, I guess, in some cases... those are probably the top 3 busts, I would probably say. You're right on Najee Harris for sure. But DJ Moore is probably like in the top 10, top 5 maybe, because of where his draft capital probably ended up for you. Because the quarterback situation in Carolina, like they are at this point, I know they just won, but at 3-7, you will be in contention for drafting like a Bryce Young or a CJ Stroud or someone like that.
Yeah, it's not pretty. And it does, I mean, that part at least does bode a little bit nicely for DJ Moore, that maybe they'll finally get a quarterback. But it's been disappointing because I don't think they know really how to use him. I mean, just get him the ball. DJ Moore is one of those talented guys that should be getting 8 to 12 targets every single game. And in the games that he's had double-digit targets. He's had 6 catches for 50 yards, 7 catches for 69 yards and a touchdown, 6 catches for 152 yards and a touchdown. Like, you just got to pepper him with the ball. And granted, like, the weather was horrible this past week, so I kind of get it. But now we're talking DJ Moore off back-to-back 6 target games, one with 2 catches for 24 yards against Cincinnati in a game where they needed to throw the ball just to stay in it. And then 4 catches this past Thursday against Atlanta for 29 yards. Am I worried? Yeah, I'm worried. DJ Moore is not getting to that 1,100-yard mark. The only thing that you can hope for is that they draft a quarterback for him, especially if you're in Dynasty. Draft him a quarterback that's somebody that can actually get him the ball, or trade him. Trade him somewhere. Like, trade him to Green Bay for Aaron Rodgers. Please, just do something. Like, because it's awful what they've done to such a good player. And the touchdown numbers, I mean, his career high is 4. And you're like, oh, touchdowns in back-to-back weeks, in week 7 and week 8. And you're like, oh, okay, maybe things are moving in the right direction. And then he gets 2 duds because they just decide not to throw him the ball. I don't get it. But they need to get him more involved in the offense. Like, if maybe they do have plans to make the playoffs here because that division's so horrible. Like, Steve Wilks is coaching for maybe a job here.
Yeah, it's true.
Maybe Steve Wilks puts on enough of a, like, he got rid of Robbie Anderson. He's fired 2 coaches, and they've won some football games. I mean, their recipe for success of running Deonta Foreman 31 times is not something, unless you're the Tennessee Titans, that works all that well. But he's coaching for a job here. If he gets into the playoffs, I can, not that I can guarantee, but I would almost guarantee that he's going to keep that head coaching job.
Yeah, I would think so, right? I mean, given how different the team has looked since they got rid of Matt Rhule, I would be surprised.
And they traded Christian McCaffrey, yeah, and they're still winning. And like, still that winning. To me, yeah, you know, that's, again, not a recipe for success, but it's working.
Real quick, would you start DJ Moore? Well, okay, let me rephrase that, actually. Would you start any Panther not named Foreman next week against the Ravens on the road? That's the next matchup for the Panthers. Ravens also coming off a bye, right? They're maybe a little healthier. The defense, actually. Yeah. Defense, like, their defense wasn't terrible, but since they got Roquan Smith from the Bears, it actually, like, looks even better, I would say.
Well, their secondary is vastly improved. Remember, they were so horrible to start the year because they had 4 or 5 guys out.
Yeah.
And they're starting to get healthier, and now they're much better. I mean, DJ Moore in a desperation, probably flex spot next week. But other than that, no, I'm not starting anybody.
Yeah, I think I'm probably on board with you with that. Let's get to our start sits. Let's just get to the first one before we hit a quick break, because I just want to get to this one as early as possible. The Seahawks at Bucks game, which is, of course, in Munich, Germany. I guess it's our 3rd or 4th now. I can't forget. There have been quite a few. But 3rd or 4th international game of the season. First game in Germany. All the other games so far have been in various stadiums in England. But this one in Munich, Germany, the Buccaneers, I guess, quote-unquote, the home team in this one. But let's start with the Seahawks. I actually saw this report right before we got on the air about 20 minutes ago. There was a report from Ian Rapoport that Geno Smith has done enough to get a new contract for next year. I guess they're in negotiations with him. He will be the starter in 2023. So good to know. I guess if you're a keeper in a keeper league and you got Geno Smith for basically nothing off the waiver wire, that's not a terrible keeper play, I would say. And it also makes you feel a little better about maybe how the usage rate for Kenneth Walker, the usage rate for DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett. But as far as today's game goes, I still think that basically everyone is WR2s, QB2s, Kenneth Walker, maybe like a mid to back end RB1. That's kind of how I look at it, right? Because Geno Smith has been pretty, pretty good, right? A hot streak, three straight games with at least 2 TDs. He completes over 73% of his passes. He's 12th in passing attempts, which is pretty impressive, all things considered, considering that Kenneth Walker still gets the ball like 25 to 30 times a game, it would seem. And and Metcalf and Lockett, both WR2s for me.
Yeah, so Lockett and Metcalf, I mean, we expected a little bit of a downswing, right? No Russell Wilson. It turns out that nobody likes Russell Wilson and everybody likes Geno Smith, which, let's not forget, Geno Smith got punched out by one of his own teammates.
Oh my gosh, so you're right. He was with the Giants, right? Oh,
yeah. Or was it the Giants or was it with the Jets?
I mean, he's played for both teams. So
one of the two teams not actually based in New York, yeah. Hashtag Buffalo Bills, Bills Mafia. He's come a long way. And DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So Lockett's wide receiver 10 in half PPR scoring. Metcalf, wide receiver 19 in half PPR scoring. And Metcalf has missed time in games, whereas Lockett, generally speaking, has been fairly healthy. Kenneth Walker, since taking over as a lead back, has been excellent. He's RB2 over the last 4 weeks with at least one touchdown in each of those games. You could start those guys with confidence. They've been really good. I didn't think that we would get that from the Seattle Seahawks, who, by the way, have won four straight games. And, man, I wonder if that continues today against the Bucs, who are just an absolute disaster. And like I said, Geno Smith is in every week starter territory right now.
Yeah, he is. He really is. I'm in a 2QB league, and I have Joe Burrow on bye. And the choice was Derek Carr. Well, I guess Derek Carr starting either way, unfortunately. But the Burrow on bye, so it was, the choice was Jimmy G or Geno Smith. And I was like, well, it's a no-brainer. You got to start Geno.
Can I offer an opinion?
Okay.
I think you should start Jimmy G instead of Derek Carr.
Probably might not be a bad choice. Like, given who else is available on the waiver wires, probably not a bad decision. Noah Fant and Will Dissly also. I guess if you have to start one of them, probably Noah Fant, right? If you have to roster one of them, they play similar snap shares, 44 snaps for Fant, 43 snaps for Will Dissly. But Fant did run more routes compared to Dissly, 24 routes for him versus 14 for Dissly, 6 targets for Fant, 4 targets for Dissly. I guess there was some times where Dissly has found the end zone versus Fant. I think Dissly has 3 touchdowns, I believe, and Fant only has 1, and that was all the way back in week 4. So there's some not so great options, I would say, for the tight end spot. Probably some better options later on today. But if you're in a pinch, like if you're relying on, let's say, the return of, I don't know, let's say you were hoping that David Njoku was going to play this week, or you have Mark Andrews and he's on bye, or anything like that, I feel like those are maybe good options. But again, the Buccaneers' defense against tight ends are like middle of the pack. Like they're like in that 8 to 10 range in terms of points given up. But part of me kind of feels like this might be a game where neither team possesses the ball all that much.
Yeah, I have a feeling that I would play Fant over Dissly, especially after last week, because that's what we said. Oh, is Noah Fant a good start? I mean, yeah, the Cardinals defense sucks against tight ends, so maybe you throw a dart for Noah Fant. I'm not sure if we're going to get that this week. So according to Fantasy Pros, Tampa Bay is 10th against opposing tight ends, but the offense funnels through Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf and Kenneth Walker. That's kind of how we should operate. But if, like you said, if there was a dart throw to play, I would play Noah Fant just because I think he's the better player, and I think he's slowly starting to get into a better groove with this offense.
On the Buccaneers side of things, Tom Brady, Leonard Fournette, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, probably the four players you're going to have the most questions about. Brady hasn't thrown a lot of interceptions this year. He just also hasn't thrown a lot of touchdowns this year, right? He has 10 touchdowns on the season, only one game with multiple touchdowns. If you saw Brady go out and throw for like 300 yards and 4 touchdowns, I don't think you'd be that shocked considering what we saw from him even as recently as last season. But it just looks like things are a little scattered right now. So for that reason, he's probably still a pretty kind of like a middling QB2, I would say. Leonard Fournette also struggling right now with the offensive line kind of in disarray, also an RB2. And he has lost work to Rashad White, but not in so much that I would recommend starting Rashad White. Like, I don't know where you are on White, but I would not recommend playing White over some other maybe higher upside options, given just the general clunkiness of the Buccaneers offense.
So Rashad White, he barely out-touched him. I just don't know how much we trust Leonard Fournette at this point. Did you see the story about he got his passport like 4 hours before the bus left to go to the airport?
I did see this, yeah.
We were so close to Rashad White season. We were this close, show. Greg Allman, who's the Bucs beat writer for The Athletic, predicted that Rashad White was going to take over this backfield. And we said that from the beginning of the year, that there was a chance here for Rashad White to get some meaningful reps, especially down the stretch and into fantasy playoffs. And I still think that that's going to happen. He's just a little bit more dynamic, and you probably need somebody that is a little bit more dynamic, especially the way that the offensive line is playing. I trust Mike Evans. I still trust Chris Godwin, even though he had like felt like 100 catches for 8 yards last week against the Rams. But the guy who I find the most interesting today, and he was the guy who caught the game-winning touchdown last week against the Rams, is Cade Otton, who is the tight end. I don't know if Cameron Brate is playing today, but Cade Otton has really played well in his spot duty since Cameron Brate went out. And Otton offers you more athletically than both Cameron Brate and, of course, Kyle Rudolph. The Seahawks are horrible against tight ends. Like, we talk about the Cardinals being bad against tight ends, and they're second worst. But the Seahawks allow the most points per game to opposing tight ends. And I think that Cade Otton is a sneaky good start if you've got injuries, like you talked about, David Njoku's out, or you have Mark Andrews on the bye, or you're just not convinced that if you're worried about TJ Hockenson against Matt Milano, which you probably should be, then Cade Otton is a very interesting start. And I think he ends up having a pretty decent fantasy day.
Yeah, the Seahawks give up second most fantasy points to the tight ends. 19.98 points per game. And he also plays an average of 80% of the team's snaps since week four, and has actually played more than that the last couple of weeks. So I don't disagree with you. Probably a TE1, but again, to be a TE1, the bar is so low, right? The bar is just so incredibly low. So with all those numbers kind of seemingly going in Otten's favor, yeah, you would think that he is definitely a middling TE1 this week. So I would definitely, I mean, if we were just talking about Fant and Disley, I'd probably fire him up over both of those guys. And again, if you were someone who didn't feel comfortable playing Kyle Pitts, or if you were someone who was waiting on the return of Njoku, or you have someone else on bye, Cade Otton is definitely a good streamer for tight ends this week. Let's take a very quick break, Matt. When we come back, we'll continue the start sits. And don't forget, at the top of the hour, the People's Text Line, 590-590, name and location. I see a whole ton of texts here, so keep them coming, and we'll try and prioritize the text that involves Seahawks and Buccaneers, since that game gets going in about an hour. But still to come, the People's Text Line straight ahead. More start sits on the Fantasy Show. Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese alongside you as we discuss Week 10 in the NFL. Injury news and notes, start sits for every game, and your text messages on the People's Text Line at 590-590. Leave your name and location, please. See a whole bunch of texts coming in here. So shoot us a text at 590-590. We'll try and prioritize the texts that concern players that play in Germany in about an hour's time. So again, shoot us a text at 590-590. But Matt, let's start with our start sits, or continue with our start sits. Vikings at Bills, the next one here, your Buffalo Bills. And I think the most interesting thing about this game, because on the Vikings side of things, you're starting Kirk Cousins. I would think in most times, like, he's a QB2, but unless you have like one of the top QB options, you're probably not doing a whole lot better than Kirk Cousins basically this season. Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, RB1, WR1, you're starting them. But apart from them, I guess you mentioned it before, the TJ Hockenson matchup against Matt Milano probably is the next most interesting thing. But really, to me, in this game, the status of Josh Allen is what affects basically everything, because it affects the value of any Buffalo Bills players. It affects how much they run the ball. It affects Stephon Diggs. It probably affects Gabe Davis as well. And then on the flip side, if the Bills don't possess the ball as much, it probably also affects how much the Vikings are using their players too.
Yeah, and it does look like Josh Allen is going to play. Basically, what I've gathered is they talked extensively with doctors. It's not going to make the injury any worse, so it's a pain tolerance thing. And somebody tweeted, and I apologize as to who it was, but they basically, and it was one of the reporters that we all know, I can't remember which one, but they basically said, like, the Bills aren't an organization that is going to play him unless he can go at 90%.
Right.
So I would expect that Josh Allen is not going to be limited. They might run the ball a little bit more, because the Vikings have been, they're not very good. Like, they've been decent against the run, but they're not great against the run. Where they've really allowed a lot of points is through the air. But on the Vikings side, Yeah, Jefferson, of course. The Bills just have had a really hard time stopping opposing teams' wide receiver ones without Trey White, who I don't believe is playing today. They called up Xavier Rhodes, former Viking Xavier Rhodes, to play today. So Adam Thielen is an interesting one. I think he's more of a flex play this week. Last week, 3 catches for 67 yards. But prior to that, the only time he had less than 4 catches was week one. And that was against the Green Bay Packers in a tough matchup. So, I mean, Adam Thielen's in an interesting spot. Dalvin Cook, you're obviously starting. I would just temper my expectations for TJ Hawkinson, who was better than I thought he was going to be in his Vikings debut last week.
And so, 9 catches for Hawkinson.
Yeah, like I was expecting it to be a kind of slow intake here, but I was wrong on that. And TJ Hawkinson was great. And other than that, from the Vikings, I mean, it's the usual suspects, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. I like that you mentioned Adam Thielen. I do think you're right in that he is a flex play for me, and probably will be for the rest of the season. Like, I just don't foresee a matchup without even looking at the Vikings calendar. I just don't really see a matchup where he would be anything but a flex play, only because he doesn't catch
until they play the Lions show.
Okay, if you know what, fair. Maybe then he gets bumped up to like WR3 status, right, in that particular matchup. Only because like TJ Hawkinson, he seems to have Thielen seems to have a nice floor, because TJ Hawkinson, we just said, caught 9 targets for 70 yards, and even so, in his like first addition into the whole Vikings group, Adam Thielen still had 67 yards, right? So I feel like that probably bodes well for his floor. I just don't know how high the ceiling is, considering that outside of a couple of passes and like 50-something yards, 60-something yards, you're probably not getting too much. That probably does mean his value is a little higher in half or full PPR versus standard. But if he catches a touchdown, you feel pretty good about it, right? Like, we're having the same conversation we had about like Drake London, because in the end he caught a touchdown. You think, okay, that was not so bad in the end, right? But I just, you know, temper, like you said, temper expectations for any pass catcher, I dare say, not named Justin Jefferson in the the Minnesota Vikings offense. For the Buffalo Bills, even if Josh Allen is limited, Stephon Diggs probably is still always going to be a WR1, like no matter what. I believe in certain formats, he is the wide receiver one on the season, and he has been so good. Case Keenum obviously has some experience, to say the least, throwing to Stephon Diggs of all people in a game involving the Vikings of all teams. So I think you can probably feel okay about that. I'm not so sure about Gabe Davis. Like I admit I was relatively high on Gabe Davis this season, Matt. And I have a kind of a tough time, Josh Allen or Keenum, I have a tough time thinking that Davis is anything but maybe a flex player, or like a middling WR3 at this point. It just, he's kind of like boom or bust, it would seem, in the same way like Mike Williams is.
Yeah, that's what it's kind of been throughout this season. And it's been, honestly, it's been super disappointing, because he started out the season with a great game against the Rams, and then he had an ankle injury. I think it was like week 3, and he was not playing in that game. And then I don't know where his health is at with that ankle injury. I mean, he certainly hasn't popped up on the injury report, so I'm assuming he's fine. What I think should happen here is, we saw how much success the slot receiver position has had with the Buffalo Bills over the past couple of seasons, with Cole Beasley, namely. I do wonder if maybe they just got to get him going by using him out of the slot, getting him some touches, and then kind of open up the offense a little bit. Because Stephon Diggs is great, and there's no question about that, but it does really feel like the Bills' offense, in a sense, has become kind of a one-trick pony, and they do need to get Gabe Davis a little bit more involved here.
Yeah, I do want to see some more from Davis, barely cracking 10 points in his last 2 games combined. And again, he had some good plays against some good games, I should say, against the Chiefs and Steelers. But again, this is the roller coaster that comes with having a boom or bust player. For me, flex play this week, Dawson Knox, even in, again, we talked about the low bar that is rostering tight ends. I would still not play Dawson Knox until I see more from him. He has not had over 50 yards in a game this season. Let's move on to the next one here. Lions at Bears. And I have a feeling this is going to be a pretty high-scoring game, which, of course, by saying that, has probably cursed this game to be like a 14-10 final or something like that.
But the Packers-Lions last week?
Yeah, exactly. What a disappointment that was. But good for the Lions for picking up their third win of the season. Anyone who said the Lions had a real chance to finish above the Packers in this division, that might be like legitimately the upset of the entire year. But Jared Goff, you got DeAndre Swift, you got Amon-Ra St. Brown. Khalif Raymond was a guy we talked about before. Probably not a bad flex play, WR3 play if you're in particularly deep leagues, but you're still starting the St. Browns, the Swifts, and the Goffs of the world, probably in that QB, WR, RB2 range, I would say.
Yeah, and DeAndre Swift last week, super disappointing, just because he only played 16% of the snaps. Like, Justin Jackson played 22% of the snaps. Like, yeah. It was not pretty. There was a report that they were going to get him more, DeAndre Swift, that is, more involved this week. I don't know what the heck is going on here. Swift does not have an injury designation going into this game. Josh Reynolds has been ruled out. I mean, you have to think that DeAndre Swift has a better game. The Bears at this point in the season have allowed the fifth most points to running back. So I feel like you can start Jamal Williams. Well, you're going to start Jamal Williams because he's clearly the goal line back, which I also still don't get. But anyway, DeAndre Swift, I would hope, is going to soak up some of the targets left behind by the trade of TJ Hawkinson. I hope that he's going to get a little bit more run. I'm hoping he gets like 10 to 15 touches, because if he does, he is one of the best producers on a points per touch basis this season. He's been that good. He's just not getting the workload that you would hope for. So he's a little bit of a risky RB2, but the problem with DeAndre Swift is if he plays, you have to start him.
That's the thing, right? It would just suck so much for you to not start him, and then that's finally, because he's so talented, and we have seen him be incredibly efficient with the touches, even this season, right? Even this season. So I think I agree with you. If you have Swift and he's playing, you probably have to start him. On the Bears side of things, Justin Fields, boy, 42, over 42 fantasy points last week with one of the, I believe he broke Michael Vick's single game QB rushing yards record. Is that right? Like he had a massive scamper to basically start the game, like in the middle of the game for his first score, right? I think it was like a 61-yard rushing touchdown. He is absolutely ridiculous. The Lions allow fantasy points wise over 23 points per game to QBs. That's the third highest in the NFL. We actually said that same thing about the Dolphins last week. I don't know if you remember, we had this conversation on the air last week, Matt, when we were talking about Fields and the prospect of rushing QBs against the Dolphins defense. And this is a defense last week that going into that game had allowed like X amount of yards per carry to Josh Allen and like twice as many yards per carry, like double digits yards per carry to Lamar Jackson. And Justin Fields predictably absolutely shredded them. The Lions, again, allow over 23 points per game to QB. So you're firing, I mean, after last week, you're firing up Justin Fields probably for the rest of the season, I have to imagine. But I he's probably locked in as a QB1, I would guess, for the rest of the season for most people. David Montgomery and Darnell Mooney, the rest of the kind of main options you can start here. But really the most valuable fantasy player in this game overall is, I would guess, Mr. Justin Fields.
Can I take my victory lap now?
Yes, please.
Okay. I'm actually wearing my Justin Fields. It's a Soldier Fields shirt. Okay. It has a shadow of Justin Fields' head on it. He's just been so good. They're finally tailoring a playbook. Like, what a far cry from Matt Nagy's horrible offense with Justin Fields. Ooh, isn't it?
I know.
The Bears goodness. Offense is, over the last like 5 weeks, is one of the highest scoring offenses in the league. I actually do like Darnell Mooney this week, wide receiver 23 over the last 4 weeks since this kind of mini breakout has happened for Justin Fields. And the Lions, not good against opposing pass catchers. They're just not a good defense, period. I think you actually have to start Darnell Mooney every week now. And Cole Kmet is tight end 6 over the last 4 weeks. And we talk about not having to have a high bar to get as a tight end 1. After basically being invisible for like the first 6 weeks of the season, Cole Kmet's been a lot better. So I actually think that Cole Kmet is in that, like, you know, tight end 7 to 9 range, and he's got some touchdown upside. I think he had 2 last week. So he's got some touchdown upside against the Lions. He could creep into like the top 3 or 4 this week. So I like him as a start, and the both running backs, I think you can make the case should start against this Lions defense, because like you said, it does have the makings of a high scoring game. And I think that's what it's going to end up being.
Yeah, 3 touchdowns in the last 2 games is probably not sustainable, all things considered. But 6 targets in last week's game could be something to look forward to going forward. But yeah, I think like as someone who drafted Kmet in our 14 team league and then had to watch him put up like zeros for like 2 or 3 straight weeks was pretty discouraging. But to see the second half surge from the entire Bears offense, mostly keyed by Justin Fields, definitely pretty encouraging. But yeah, 9.1 points and then 22 points in his last couple of games, respectively. I definitely think Cole Kmet should be rostered. It's not a bad guy to take a shot on, because like you said, the Lions defense is absolutely atrocious when it comes to covering pass catchers. They allow 9.75 points per game to tight ends, which is the third most in the NFL. So again, like not a bad defense to take a shot on if you are tight end needy here in week 10. Let's continue with Jags Chiefs, our next start sit here. And again, Travis Etienne looks absolutely terrific. He is the slam dunk start every week since it's his backfield. He's a workhorse, right? I think it's not just that he looks great, but just volume wise gets just a ton of work, right? So you want to start him absolutely every single week. He averages 26 carries a game after averaging just 9.7 carries a game when James Robinson was still involved. So great stuff for Travis Etienne. Christian Kirk, he leads the Jags with a 19.7% target share. So that was something that we saw. It kind of had like tapered off in the middle of October for some reason, but from in September and then for most of November so far, the last couple of weeks at least, he has been pretty good. So 8.6 targets per game over the last 3 weeks. And, you know, against the Chiefs, I would imagine the Jags have to throw the ball a lot. So really the question for me, Matt, is just how much do you trust Trevor Lawrence himself? Because he has thrown some really ugly interceptions, and your guy, Evan Engram.
I actually like a bunch of Jags this week. Like Trevor Lawrence, I was actually very surprised to see that Trevor Lawrence was QB9 on the year. Very surprised by that. And Evan Engram, I think you have to start Evan Engram this week. I think it's Lawrence. I think it's Etienne. I think it's Kirk. And I think it's Engram. So KC has allowed the 8th most points per game to QBs, wide receivers, running backs, and 7th most points per game to tight ends. Screams a high scoring game. Trevor Lawrence is going to have to throw the ball seemingly a lot. And for any prop bettors out there, and I know there are a bunch, Kansas City, and take this for what it is, Kansas City has allowed 7.9 receptions to running backs per game and 55.8 yards receiving to running backs per game. So I think that Travis Etienne is in that blow up spot here. Like, I know he's been blowing up every week because he's been that good, but this feels like 150 or 160 total yards and 2 touchdown type game, just because of the nature of probably being high scoring, the fact that they allow a lot of yards to running backs, the fact that they just haven't, the Chiefs, let's face it, have allowed a lot of points, and their defense is on the field a lot because of the quick scoring nature of their offense. And it puts a lot of pressure, believe it or not, on that defense. So I really like a bunch of Jags this week.
I was just looking, while you were talking, I was just looking up to see what the prop is for Etienne specifically in receiving yards. It's 18 and a half. Is the over under. So
I like that.
So you like that
I
one?
I like
right?
that. Yeah, right, I do.
Well, okay, I'm going to take it. When we take a break in 6 minutes, I might some bet some.
Might sprinkle a couple of shekels on it.
I might. I really might. Let's do the Chiefs as well. You don't need us to tell you to start Patrick Mahomes or Travis Kelce. Juju Smith-Schuster. Now, again, the Chiefs threw the ball, what, like 68 times? Like, Patrick Mahomes threw the ball a lot last week. So you can't expect that every single week. He essentially threw the ball twice as much as any quarterback would in a regular week. If you consider 30 passing attempts, like the regular quote-unquote benchmark for any QB, even in 2022. But no Mecole Hardman. He has been ruled out, so he's not playing. So I would imagine, like, whenever I see a pass catcher for Kansas City get ruled out in the Patrick Mahomes era, my first thought is, okay, that just really means more passes will go to Travis Kelce. But actually, we've seen Juju do the dirty work in the middle of the field. Like, if Kelce is trusted by Mahomes to make those contested passes, catches over the middle of the field, Juju has actually made those plays a little more frequently recently. So I like Juju as a middling WR2 more so in half or full PPR leagues than I do in standard leagues. In standard leagues, I might actually downgrade him to maybe even a flex play, but in PPR leagues, half or full, definitely a WR2 because he just sees so much of that target share. He's been great. Maybe there's a chance you fire up Kadarius Toney today, though, if there's no Mecole Hardman.
Yeah, that was the guy that I really had my eye on. He didn't play a ton last week, but we saw how they're going to use him, and lo and behold, they're going to use him like they use Mecole Hardman. What a surprise. I think that he's an interesting flex play this week. And listen, we talked about Juju Smith-Schuster there for a second. He's wide receiver 21 on the season, and he wasn't like, and that's according to Fantasy Pros, and he started off a little bit slow, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't great at the beginning of the year because, you know, we've seen it. Oh, they're going to use, it's going to be multiple receivers that get, you know, it's going to be unpredictable every single week. Well, over the last 4 weeks, it's been pretty predictable. Juju Smith-Schuster is fifth in fantasy points per game in half PPR scoring. So Juju is locked in there, especially like you mentioned, half PPR and full PPR. But I do like Kadarius Toney today. Like we talked about last week, they liked him in the draft, which, you know, the Giants jumped ahead and took him way ahead of anybody's expectations. And now they have him in their offense. He's had the extra week to work with the group. I think Kadarius Toney is in a very interesting kind of boom or bust spot in a flex position.
Yeah, like if you're kind of sprinkling other names that Toney shares like a tier with, I guess, kind of like a Donovan Peoples-Jones, like Darius Slayton, you know, that generally speaking, that general category right now. And but he has a pretty nice upside. So maybe Mac Hollins as well, because a lot of guys in Vegas are injured or out, right? Like, it's those guys are where I lean for Toney right now. But I do think the upside, just because of all of those teams, he probably has the best quarterback and the guy who has been the most consistent, right? I like to use the word consistency. Patrick Mahomes is as consistent as it gets, and you know he's going to throw the ball a lot. The only question when it comes to the Chiefs are the running backs. For me, they're all sits at this point. Like, I don't think I'm going to take chances with any of the running backs. Like, I guess, like, technically, snap share wise, Jerick McKinnon, I suppose, is the RB1, but that doesn't really mean much in Kansas City. Like, we've seen Isaiah Pacheco, they're like, oh, Pacheco's going to start the game. That doesn't really mean anything at this point, right? So I'm sitting all the Kansas City running backs, including Clyde Edwards-Helaire. After seeing a lot of work in the passing game, his fantasy value has really dropped off. So I'm not starting any of those guys against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's squeeze one more start in before we take a quick break here, Matt. Browns at Dolphins, and it's not too hard because I think most of the usual suspects on both sides of this game, you're starting just without us having to tell you. Like, you're always going to start Nick Chubb, and for the Dolphins, I think most people are going to start Tua. They're mostly going to start Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle basically every single week. So it just leaves the guys on the periphery, right? Like, I think for the Browns, Amari Cooper, WR2, Donovan Peoples-Jones, I would say flex play, but I think right now Peoples-Jones is a stash until the QB change in Cleveland happens after next week, right? So if you want to get ahead of things and roster him now, if you have the bench space, might not be a bad idea.
I like Donovan Peoples-Jones. He's been surprisingly good, and he was, I believe, one of the players on our waiver wire this week. And I do agree, get ahead of it, because he's just been super productive. And David Njoku's out again this week, and I don't know, it's a high ankle sprain, and those are kind of tricky to come back from.
Yeah,
so Donovan Peoples-Jones over the last 5 weeks has had 71 receiving yards, 50 receiving yards, 74, 71, and 81. You take that every single week, and I'm starting him this week against the Miami Dolphins, who, let's face it, have allowed a lot of points this year. And like I said, I still think they're winning games in spite of their coach. But they rank, if I'm looking at it here, according to Fantasy Pros, they are ranked 11th against opposing wide receivers. I think Amari Cooper and Donovan Peoples-Jones are good starts. And here's the other one. Miami allowing 4.8 catches per game to running backs. And the last time we saw Kareem Hunt, he had a good outing with 72 total yards, including four catches. So I think in a flex spot that Kareem Hunt is in a good little matchup here for the Browns. Jacoby Brissett's also in a good little matchup here. But Joe, the biggest question mark I have going into this game is what happens with the Miami running backs?
Yeah.
He went from Raheem must start to Raheem, I'm not so sure about starting him, because Jeff Wilson looked like the better running back. Like, did Mike McDaniel want to acquire Jeff Wilson all along because that was the guy that was going to be his lead back? Like, this makes no sense here. And I'd be very, very curious to see how this plays out. Like, is Jeff Wilson going to become the new league winner because he's just all of a sudden taken over the Miami starting running back job?
Look, I'm not going to take a victory lap on this because I don't, this is not something I'm pleased to be right about, but this was something we talked about last week, right? On Sunday last week, was that when, going back to the days in San Francisco, when both Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson Jr. were healthy, the split share, like the share of snaps and all that stuff was split pretty evenly. It was like a 55-45% snap share split. And last week, the first game since the deals were made by the front office, Jeff Wilson Jr. led the backfield very slightly in snap share. It was like 49% to 47%. And Wilson outgained Mostert 51-29 on 9 carries. He also caught all 3 of his targets. I'm not ready to say that you can't start Mostert, but we're definitely at the point where this very well may have gone from Mostert getting like 90% of the carries out of the backfield over Chase Edmonds to being a full-blown committee. I think that might actually be what we're going to see here, a complete committee, because that's what it kind of was in San Francisco when McDaniel was the run game coordinator. So he clearly wants to some degree, replicate that here. So if that's the case, then it basically makes both of them, well, I suppose it makes Jeff Wilson Jr., because the Browns aren't great against the run, if he's going to be the quote-unquote lead back, I guess it does make him the RB2 for this week, the RB1 in this offense, and it makes Raheem Mostert maybe a more of a flex play, but still, it essentially turns into the same way that David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert have been treated, because those guys both run the ball a whole hell of a lot. So if that's the case, then I imagine, yeah, we're closer to a committee than any one guy differentiating himself.
Yeah, and they're going to cannibalize each other, it does feel like, doesn't it? Yeah. And that's what the biggest concern was, because Mostert, I mean, here's the thing. You didn't spend a ton of draft capital to get Raheem Mostert, so it's fine. But that, I mean, yeah, I would be very, very scared to start either guy. But Jeff Wilson also got used in the passing game. He ended up catching a receiving touchdown, so maybe. I think they're probably both flex starts because, you mentioned, the Browns' run defense is not very good.
No, it's not great at all. And can I just say real quick before we break, someone in my league spent $57 to pick up Jeff Wilson Jr. this week. I think the next closest bid was like, I don't know, like $20 or like $15. So $57. I hope for his sake, my pal Simon, I hope for his sake that is worth it. I sincerely hope it was, because $57, I guess that's why you save your fab, so you can like make these kinds of moves in the end. But boy, for his sake, I do hope. I don't have to play him for the rest of the season, thankfully. So I really do hope that it works out and is not just like we were talking about, a full blown committee. Although it certainly looks like Mike McDaniel wants to keep both running backs fresh. But again, against the Browns of all teams, at least here in Week 10, it might be not a bad play to get both those guys in your lineup, albeit maybe as RB3s, as flex plays. But let's take a very quick break here, Matt. When we come back, we'll get to the rest of the start sits. And of course, the People's text line at the top of the hour, 590-590 is where you can text us, name and location. You see a bunch of texts here. We'll get to all of those, as many as we can, on the air. And if we don't get to your text on the air, we will answer all of them before the game start at 1 p.m. Eastern. But the People's text line straight ahead on the Fantasy Show. Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Show Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Show, hour 2 here across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese with you, week 10 in action. Well, I guess it's about to get started here. The Munich game between the Seahawks and Buccaneers will start in about 25 minutes. We are here for all of your injury news, starts, sits, and of course, the People's Text line at 590-590, name and location. But Mr. Marchese, are ready to do some Sunday morning texts?
Of course, let's do it.
Let's do it.
And now, your fantasy questions on the People's Text line.
All right, you guys know the drill. We take your text, 590-590, name and location, please. And we will answer as many as we can right now for the next, like, 10 to 15 minutes. And if we don't get to your question on the air, we will answer all of your questions off the air before we get out of here in about 45 minutes. I usually just hop on a phone call with Marchese, and then we answered all of your text line questions. I'm just going to scan this text line real quick, Matt, just to get to the questions that concern Seahawks Buccaneers. I see one here from Mike in Toronto. So I'll get to the second part of his question first, actually. He says, thoughts on using Tampa Bay defense. I have him in, but the alternate choices are Rams, Broncos, or maybe there's another suggestion that I'm not thinking of. Thank you. He has another question as well for, like, actual players, but he has a Tampa Bay defense question.
I don't love it. I would actually rather play the Rams, especially because it does look like Colt McCoy is going to be starting for the Cardinals. Jeez. What a matchup that's going to be. I know we're going to get to that later. It's going to be horrible. I think I would probably play the Rams in this one. The Seattle offense is just too good right now. I can't believe I just said that with Geno Smith as the quarterback, but I would be starting the Rams.
Yeah, you know what? The Seattle offense has been more consistent. That's for sure, right? Look, it has been more consistent. It just moves pretty well. And I mean, like, I know the Bucs defense last week gave up, what, like 13 points, which is not too terrible. But also, the Rams offense is in a bit of a disarray, right? So I feel like that Rams Cards game, if Colt McCoy's the guy, he might be a pretty low scoring game. The other half of Mike's question, again, in 12 team non PPR. So I guess standard league, he needs one for a flex play. Gibson, so I assume Antonio Gibson, Jeff Wilson Jr., or Deontay Johnson. So not a PPR league, standard league for Gibson, Jeff Wilson Jr., Deontay.
I still like Deontay Johnson. They're playing the Saints today. It's not horrible. That's a really tough. I think I lean Deontay Johnson. I think Deontay Johnson catches a touchdown today.
Oh, okay. I like, as someone starting Deontay Johnson in one of these many leagues, I endorse that message, but I certainly hope that's the case. So, okay, we're going with Deontay Johnson and Rams defense over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I see one here for Jeff. Jeff has a bunch of questions, so we'll just answer this first one on the air, and then we'll get to the rest of them off the air before we get out of here, or after the show, rather, after we get out of here. But his first question was full PPR, and I get why you ask this question, because generally speaking, you'd probably never ask this question because Josh Allen has been phenomenal and you draft Josh Allen highly for a reason. But Josh Allen or Geno Smith is his question. It's full PPR league, but that matters less for QBs.
Oh, boy. I feel like if Josh Allen's playing, you got to start him. The Vikings haven't been great against opposing quarterbacks. And it's Josh Allen. I struggle with the idea of sitting him. And like I said earlier, if the Bills are allowing him to play, that means that he's probably 85 to 90% or better.
Well, and so the thing is with this too is because of the time difference, right? Because this game with Geno starts in like 20 minutes. And yeah, the Allen game does start a little bit later. Like enough that if, like, later, obviously, in the sense that if you don't start Geno and then Josh Allen doesn't play, you're screwed, right? So, but I think it does look like he will play, I believe.
Yeah, every indication that we've been given is that he's going to play.
All right, and it's probably a better thing for this team as well. I mean, Case Keenum would probably be fine, like serviceable. You know, he's probably one of the better backups in the league, I would say at this point, but still, your ceiling is so much higher when you have someone like Josh Allen. Okay, I'm just going to, while we're talking, I'm just scanning the rest of the text line. Here's one. No, there's no name on this one, but it does seem like it's from an Alberta area code. Good morning, guys. Geno or Prescott today? Please help. As much as I love Geno Smith, I might slightly lean, honestly, Dak Prescott still. I know the matchup is not the greatest matchup. Dallas and Green Bay playing a little later on today, one of the 4:25 Eastern games. But still, I don't know. I think it's very close, but I probably still go Dak Prescott.
I'm actually leaning Geno. The Green Bay defense is, they're still good, right? And that's the part that has been, it's why the season hasn't been completely ugly for them. But I still lean Geno Smith in this one over Dak Prescott. And I love Dak Prescott. That Cowboys offense just looks weird. And I think they're going to try and run the ball a lot against Green Bay today.
So Matt goes Geno, I go Dak. This one is from Hauser in Cannington. I don't know where Cannington is, but I think it's in Ontario. But Hauser says he has Njoku, tight end damage right now, but I also have Brady's tight end. Is Cade Otton any good? He is getting red zone targets, but I also picked up Foster Moreau. More for Otton's bye week next week. But should I start Moreau over Otton today? In PPR, I am 9-0. Hey, congratulations, Hauser. That's great. If you're in 9-0 in a PPR league, that's fantastic. But is Cade Otton any good? I mean, we talked about him a little bit more. If the other option is Foster Moreau, I would probably go with Cade Otton, personally.
Yeah, I would be going with Cade Otton. Again, it's the matchup. Seattle not very good against opposing tight ends. I'd roll with Cade Otton here with Njoku out.
Yeah, that's a pretty simple one for me. I see another one here. This one is from Steve in East York. Okay, Steve has a couple questions, but I want to answer this one first just so I don't forget. Cade Otton or Evan Engram at tight end?
Oh, you know I love Evan Engram.
I know.
I still think that – I think Cade Otton is probably the guy. Because they can't throw to anybody else, apparently, because that offense is horrible.
Yeah, it's not
good. Yeah, Cade Otton over at Evan Engram this week.
And Steve's other questions, might as well get to these ones here. So he has a couple of ones. So Fields or Tua? That's a good problem to have. Like, I feel like you're probably good either way, Steve, but Fields against the Lions or the – who are the Dolphins playing? Dolphins or Tua with Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle. Again, you're probably getting QB1
Dolphins
production.
Playing the Browns.
Right, the Browns. So you're probably getting QB1 production from both of these guys, but where do you fall on Fields? I assume you're going Fields because you're the president of the Justin Fields fan club, but, I mean, maybe Tua? I don't know. Where are you leaning at?
I'm leaning Justin Fields. You got me, Show. I'm leaning Justin Fields. I think, and the biggest reason is the rushing floor has been so good
for
Justin Fields. And those are, I don't want to call them easy points because they're not easy points. He has to work to get those points. But for your fantasy purposes, it's easy points because he doesn't necessarily have to throw the ball. And you know, he only had 123 passing yards last week against the Dolphins. He still had 3 passing touchdowns, and he has had no less than 47 rushing yards over his past 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games. So those are 4 guaranteed points every single week.
I'm kind of surprised Tua doesn't run the ball more. Like, I know because of the concussion stuff and the injuries he has suffered during his relatively short career, maybe that's like makes him a little more cautious, but he has some wheels, right? I'm kind of surprised he doesn't use them a little more sometimes.
Yeah, he had that nasty hip injury that was really serious in college. When he was with Alabama. Yeah. And I wonder how much that has affected him. But he has his rushing floor is obviously not Justin Fields, but he's certainly a guy who can get away from pressure and make something with his feet. I don't disagree there.
Yeah, I do. But for this question for Steve, I do agree. Fields gets the slight bump over Tua because of the rushing floor. Non-PPR, he also asks, 2 wide receivers of Darnell Mooney, Cortland Sutton, Terry McLaurin, and he needs his flex. Maybe the one of those 3 left, or DeAndre Swift, A.J. Dillon, Melvin Gordon. If you're picking from like 2 wide receivers and a flex from that group of people, I feel like I probably go Mooney, McLaurin, DeAndre Swift, because A.J. Dillon just really plodding all over the field right now. He just looks so slow. I think Aaron Jones also will play, which obviously limits the upside for someone like A.J. Dillon. And then, like, Melvin Gordon and Cortland Sutton, like, I don't know. How much do you really want to feel good? Do you feel good ever about playing any Denver Broncos? For me, the answer is no.
No, the only guy I would be comfortable starting in Denver is probably Jerry Jeudy. But I like McLaurin. I like Darnell Mooney. I think those are solid. And then we needed one more, right? We needed one more.
Yeah, so two wide receivers. Yeah, Mooney, McLaurin, and then like one of DeAndre Swift, AJ Dillon, Melvin Gordon. I imagine it's Swift, right?
It's Swift.
So let's see. The other one here, another question I wanted to get to. Oh, here it is. Jason from Dartmouth in Nova Scotia, figuring out my flex spot between DK Metcalf, Sanders, and David Montgomery. Keep in mind, I'm starting. He says PJ Walker for the Seahawks. I think he means Geno Smith. Keep in mind, I am starting Geno Smith for the Seahawks as well. Greatly appreciate a text back. Thank you. And so flex spot, Metcalf, Sanders, or Montgomery. That those are your flex players. I'm curious to see who your running backs and wide receivers. It might be one of those leagues where you only start two wide receivers and two running backs, because I feel like for the most part, you're probably, unless you have like the best options in the league, you're probably starting DK Metcalf and Miles Sanders probably every week, right? Like unless they're injured or something.
Yeah, and the matchups are, the Eagles play the Commanders. Horrible name.
On Monday.
But I do like me some DK Metcalf. I think I'd lean DK Metcalf, actually, because I feel like that Eagles-Commanders game might get a little out of hand, and we might see a little bit more like Boston Scott and Kenny Gainwell.
It's funny, right? Because Miles Sanders has been great this season. There's no doubting it. But it's funny because, like, Jalen Hurts is his rushing floor, much the same that Justin Fields is. It does limit Sanders to a degree. So I feel like Sanders, he's certainly not touchdown dependent, but it kind of does feel like sometimes he is, like, when, like you said, when things get out of hand, they just put in Kenneth Gainwell, and then they just, and Hurts just stands back there and lofts it down the field. And he has been way more efficient throwing the ball this season, but it's not a bad one. I guess I'm just trying to see if there's any more here that I missed when it comes to the morning game. I don't think so. I don't, at least not for now. Okay, why don't we? Here's one more. John and Barry. I can pick up Geno Smith, or I imagine he means Garoppolo. He says Garofalo, but I imagine that's a
that autocorrect is a hell of a drug.
I think that's an autocorrect there. I can start. He says I have Kyler Murray. He starts at 4 p.m. I can pick up Geno or Jimmy G. Geno starts at 1. Do I wait to see about Kyler and take Jimmy G as security, or do I grab Geno here as well? I imagine you probably want to. If you're looking for insurance options, I imagine you go with Geno Smith.
Yeah, I'm going with Geno Smith this week. I like Jimmy Garoppolo as a start this week, but I do like Geno Smith a little bit better than Jimmy Garoppolo, because Geno Smith's been really good consistently week in and week out.
He really has been. He really, really has been. But yeah, I will, as someone who actually is in this exact situation, John, I have Kyler Murray in one league, and it's a 2QB league. I have Kyler Murray and Tom Brady, actually. So Brady and Geno Smith are both starting for me in like 10 minutes, essentially. So I would go Geno if you are worried about some of your other guys not playing. So let's go with Geno Smith for Mr. John and Barry. He has another question as well. Jerry Jeudy or Joshua Palmer. Full PPR, too. Boy, I might go Josh Palmer, honestly, given I believe no Keenan Allen and, again, no Mike Williams. A tougher matchup than last week, but, boy, Josh Palmer saw a lot of targets last week, man.
Yeah, they almost funneled him targets last week, and I don't disagree. Like I think it's definitely a tough question, but I do lean Josh Palmer.
I agree. I definitely agree. Sorry, I'm just replying to John's text. Okay, you know what? That does it for the text line. We can answer the rest of the questions off the air, or if we have some time left at the end of the show, maybe we can squeeze a couple more in. But that does it for the on-air text line questions. We'll get to the rest of them either at the end of the show or off the air. But rest assured, we will answer all of your text questions before 1 p.m. Eastern. 590-590 is where you can text us. Again, name and location, please. Let's continue with the start-sits. Texans at Giants. Here's a fun one. Maybe not so fun if you're Brandon Cooks. This was from Ian Rappaport, like right before the show started. A fascinating situation gets even more so. The Texans stripped wide receiver Brandon Cooks of his captaincy before he takes the field today. So I guess this is the part of the movie where like the captain says, turn in your badge and your gun. And he goes rogue and then he gets stuff done. I like to think, as a Brandon Cooks owner, I like to think that's it. But I for me, at least, I mean, even if he plays, the Giants are pretty stingy against wide receivers to begin with. And Davis Mills has not been great this season. But I might honestly just bench Brandon Cooks until I see something change a little bit here, Matt.
Yeah, it's really hard to start him. He didn't play last week. Like, he is a flex play at best at this point. And the Giants have been really good. And from a Houston perspective, it's really Damian Pierce, and that's it, because he seems like he's matchup proof. Like, we thought the Eagles defense last week in the Thursday Nighter was going to be so stout, and they were going to put up, you know, like somebody said, RB1 type numbers. And Damian Pierce had something to say about that, because he was excellent. I expect much of the same from Damian Pierce, and I don't expect much from anybody else in this Texans offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Turning my mic on would help answering your question. Yes, I don't trust.
Been there, done that, got that t-shirt.
I definitely think that the Texans offense is just not very fantasy relevant, unfortunately. Or at least, like, there's no way beyond Cooks, there's no way you can really accurately predict who is going to catch passes apart from Damian Pierce, right? Like, he's the guy, and that's like you said, that's pretty much it. Daniel Jones for the Giants, probably, like, I think he very well could be a QB1 because of the rushing floor. Like, Daniel Jones is one of those guys, Matt, who I think people believe is worse than he is, right? And kind of like on the flip side, I remember I was having this conversation on Sportsnet Today yesterday, but he's like one of those QBs that people think is worse than he is. And then you look at, let's say, the Jets, and you got Zach Wilson, and people think he's better than he is, for example, right? But Daniel Jones, because he, again, lowest end of QB1s, but still he moves the ball pretty well with his feet. So if you want to call him a high-end QB2 as well, that's pretty fair. But him, Saquon Barkley, obviously an RB1, probably most weeks, even if he has been quieter a little bit earlier on this past month in the last four games or so. But beyond Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, I mean, again, we mentioned Darius Slayton earlier, Wandale Robinson, both those guys probably flex plays, and then that's probably it.
We will see the return of Kenny Golladay today from injury, the disappearing act that he pulled. Talk about highway robbery, Kenny Golladay. But Ian Rappaport, I believe it was, that tweeted out that he expects him to play a lot today. And Kenny Golladay has talent. There's no question about that. There's a reason why he got paid. It hasn't worked out in New York. This is kind of his last ditch effort to make something of his time in New York, because if he doesn't, he's definitely going to be gone at the end of this year. I don't know what the cap number is to get rid of him, but I think they've had enough of Kenny Golladay. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, I want to see more Wandale Robinson in this game. And I think there's going to be an opportunity for him.
Let's move on to the next start sit as well. Saints at Steelers. And again, there are not a lot of options for the Saints, I would say. Like, I think you're probably, I know Andy Dalton's going to be the starter. It would seem for now, like, I don't know for the rest of the season, but it's an okay matchup. But again, and if you're in one QB league, there are probably better options out there. If you're in a two QB league, you might have no choice. But again, Andy Dalton, probably a middling QB2 this week, maybe even closer to like a lower end QB2. Alvin Kamara and Chris Olave are the only guys I think I would confidently start. Taysom Hill, again, the ceiling for Taysom Hill is pretty high. The floor, though, is like 1 point, right? Like, the floor is like 1 to 2 points, unfortunately. So again, when we talk about tight ends, doesn't take a whole lot to make you a TE1, but right now, I think even with Michael Thomas out for the year, right now, Taysom Hill, probably a lower end TE1, maybe even a flex play, Matt.
Yeah, Taysom Hill, the floor is lava. With Taysom Hill, that's what the floor is for him, because it can be really, really nasty. Here's the thing with Andy Dalton in this offense. Andy Dalton's floor is really low, but the ceiling can be really high. And this is a game where, let's face it, the Steelers, their defense is not very good right now. They've allowed the fifth most points to opposing QBs, the second most points to opposing wide receivers. So I actually don't hate Andy Dalton. Like, if you have Kyler Murray or Matthew Stafford, or you've got, you know, Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow, and you need a spot start, Andy Dalton is not in a bad position here. I actually like Andy Dalton this week. And of course, I liked him last week and he sucked. So I actually think that there's a bounce back here for the Saints in the offense. I think Chris Olave balls out today and he has a monster game. I would not be surprised at any of that.
On the other side of things, the Steelers, again, Deontay Johnson, probably a WR2. You said you like Deontay to catch a TD this week. He had 4 red zone targets in week 8. And we still haven't seen him score a touchdown this year. He has not been a top 20 wide receiver in any week so far this season. But again, QB change, QB turmoil, a lot of pretty tough defenses for QBs against the rookie in Kenny Pickett. So maybe things with a Saints defense that has been kind of in disarray here, maybe a little bit of an easier matchup for Kenny Pickett and Deontay Johnson. But beyond those two guys, I suppose you could flex George Pickens. I think he maybe is primed to have a decent back end of the season if things go well for Pickett and the Pittsburgh offense. But Pickens, flex play, Freiermuth, again, doesn't take a lot to be a TE1, and certainly looks like Pickett enjoys throwing the ball to Freiermuth, so I like him as a TE1. But the question for me is, and this is a genuine question because we talked about him being one of the top 3 busts this year, Najee Harris, like, do you just straight up sit him at this point? You might have to. Like, he looks like an RB3, and then you work in the amount of touches Jalen Warren has gotten. Najee Harris has looked terrible so far.
And Mike Tomlin talked about getting Jalen Warren more opportunities.
Jeez.
And that is, listen, I believe both of us saw a regression here from Najee Harris from last year.
No,
I just didn't
not
think
like
he was going to be this bad.
Yeah,
no, this is next level. And I do believe he's not fully healthy. He had the Lisfranc injury in the off season, and then it's kind of lingered and carried on into this season. I'm not convinced that he's fully healthy either. So that's part of the issue here, but the offense just hasn't been good. I want to see, though, what this offense looks like with Kenny Pickett coming out of the bye, because things change after the bye. We see rookies get involved more. We see offenses change. They kind of do a little bit of not a complete reset, but like just a recalibration. I'm not convinced that Matt Canada is the answer as the offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh, but he's going to have an opportunity to have really worked with Kenny Pickett over the course of the bye week and really kind of get things settled. I'm curious to see what they look like. The Saints are middle of the pack against most positions, but I want to know what this Pittsburgh offense looks like coming out of the bye. I do expect that we're going to see a lot more Jalen Warren than we have in the previous weeks.
I think so, too. I think you're probably right, which obviously does not sound great if you're a Najee Harris owner. And like you said, there was always going to be some regression because he scored a lot of touchdowns last year. But I don't really think it has anything to do with, doesn't have as much to do as you might imagine with, let's say, the change from Big Ben last year to Mitch Trubisky, then Kenny Pickett. I think you are right that this team, just generally speaking, is not as good. And then also the offensive line, maybe injuries for both Harris, other people. It's just been a huge mess for those guys. So I'm hoping he does better, because I would like to say you can start him going forward. But today, you know, maybe an RB3 right now at best. So if you have any better options, maybe play those ones. Before we hit a quick break, I wanted to get to one more start-sit question, because this game starts in about 3 minutes. This is from Mark in Toronto. He needs a WR2 and a flex, 2 of 4. So Chris Godwin is one of these guys, right? So Chris Godwin, DeAndre Hopkins, James Conner, or Raheem Mostert. So two of those 4 guys. Do you start Godwin, Hopkins, with no Murray, likely, James Conner, or Raheem Mostert?
And we need a wide receiver and a flex?
A wide receiver and a flex. So you could, in theory, start 2 wide receivers, or you could start 1 wide receiver and a running back.
I still like DeAndre Hopkins. Like, he's proven to be kind of QB proof over the course of his career, and he's a target monster. So I still start him. I think I still start Chris Godwin.
Okay. So you're going both wide receivers.
James Conner might get a ton of run today, you know? He played over 70% of the snaps last week. And with Colt McCoy starting, my only issue is it's hard to start 2 Cardinals in that offense if Colt McCoy is running it, right?
That's true, too. But here's the flip side is that maybe they will rely on their 2 best offensive players without Kyler.
Yeah.
Right? That's the flip
side. Yeah, you know what? The Bucs offense has just been in shambles. Let's roll with Hopkins and Connor.
Okay, cool. Hopkins and Connor. And his other question was, at QB, no Kyler, so Russell Wilson, Jacoby Brissett, or Jared Goff?
Ooh. Jacoby Brissett has the best matchup, but do I trust Jacoby Brissett? I'm not sure about that, but who is it, Russell Wilson and Jared Goff?
Those are the other 2 options, yeah.
Yeah, I don't necessarily trust either of those guys either, so that's a problem. You know what? I can't believe I'm going to say this. I think you should start Jacoby Brissett.
That's crazy. That is kind of crazy. Honestly, like, it's kind of wild. You know, I will go Jared Goff just because the Bears defense is also not super great, right? So I will go Goff, but it's, yeah, it's close. Israel is close, relatively speaking. But yeah, that does it for, again, not like for the entire text line. I just saw this one pop in right before the game starts in like seconds from now, essentially, right? So appreciate all of those. You can text us again, 590-590, name and location. We'll get to all of your text line questions after the show ends in about half an hour. But one more segment to go for the Fantasy Show. More start sits to come. Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network. The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese with you this Sunday morning. Week 10 in action now with the Munich game. Seahawks at Buccaneers in Germany. And Matt, we have six more games to go for our start sit. So let's boogie through these last ones here. Broncos at Titans. And okay, look, I think this is actually a pretty short one to tackle. We could probably could have squeezed this in before the break, but that's okay. I think the only guy I feel super comfortable, and you mentioned this already when we were doing the text line questions, the only guy I feel super comfortable starting for the Broncos really is Jerry Jeudy. I suppose Greg Dulcich, after having a couple of pretty good games, including last or the week prior to the bye. I like Greg Dulcich as a TE1 just because he seems to have a pretty nice target share. But apart from those two guys, maybe no one else really.
Yeah, Jerry Jeudy is wide receiver 17 in points per game over the last 4 weeks, which is kind of surprising. Cortland Sutton, you can't even find him on a leaderboard. Dulcich is, he's been pretty good. Like, he's been productive. Tight end 4 points per game over the last 4 weeks. And he's just behind Travis Kelce, George Kittle, and Dallas Goedert. Most interesting thing I'm looking forward to in this matchup, how is Chase Edmonds used in this game? Because they acquired him from the Miami Dolphins in that trade that brought Bradley Chubb over to Miami. And listen, he's a dynamic guy. I think he was misused in Miami. It just didn't work out. I wonder if he takes over that pass catching role and does have some value with this Broncos offense.
On the Titans side of things, is it fair to say it's just Derrick Henry and no one else?
Oh yeah, that's exactly what I wrote. Derrick Henry and that's it. And that's with Ryan Tannehill back.
Yeah.
What I would consider is Treylon Burks is coming off the IR, and if he's available in your leagues, I would stash him because, let's face it, he was drafted high. They obviously have big expectations for him, and I do believe that he's going to have a role. He'd be worth adding as a stash in the event that they just get him more involved in the offense. Speaking of more involved in the offense, Rashad White started the game and played the first 3 snaps for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So just keep that under your hat.
There you go. So there you go for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game. Again, that game early on in Munich, Germany. For the Titans, can I just say real quick, Matt, that how good would this team look if they had a wide receiver, let's say as good as A.J. Brown?
What a concept, right?
What an idea.
What a concept.
Oh, good heavens.
Unbelievable.
Good heavens. Let's move on to Colts at Raiders. And, okay, so this is going to be the first game for head coach Jeff Saturday. Not a phrase I thought I would honestly, not just this season, honestly ever say. Jeff Saturday going to be the new interim head coach after Frank Reich was fired last week. So Colts at Raiders. Again, the Colts still have a pretty good defense, which probably, generally speaking, lowers the floor for most Raiders not named Devontae Adams. But on the Colts side of things, Jonathan Taylor looks like he will play. He looked pretty good moving around in practice this week, which means he's probably an RB2. Deion Jackson goes back to being either bench fodder or waiver wire fodder. I don't know you're really doing too much with either Zach Moss or, like, I don't know, Philip Lindsay at this point. So really, like, really the only fantasy relevant players in this entire Colts offense goes back to the conversation we thought we would be having in week one of the season, which is just Jonathan Taylor and maybe Michael Pittman Jr. And unfortunately, because of the chaos with Sam Ehlinger as quarterback, Pittman's probably no more than a flex play now.
Yeah, I've got him as a wide receiver 3 flex play. The only thing that kind of gives me any optimism for that is the matchup against the Raiders, because their defense isn't very good. I think we can go quickly here with the Raiders as well. Here's the thing with the Raiders. they will not have to deal with blowing a 17-point lead because I don't know that the Colts are going to score 17 points. So, I mean, they should be okay in this one. You mentioned it. Colts are tough against opposing wide receivers. Devontae Adams, kind of a back-end wide receiver one. Darren Waller on the IR. Hunter Renfrow on the IR. I think we see a ton of Josh Jacobs today.
Ton of Mac Hollins? Huh?
He's going to get used. They're going to have to throw the ball, right? They're going to have to throw the ball, and Mac Hollins, he's proven in the past, by this year, that him and Derek Carr have an interesting rapport. So if you're desperate, there's a chance for a long Mac Hollins TD. It's not the worst start that you can have this week.
Yeah, Mac Hollins, if you're in like a 14-team league or you're like DFS and you wanted to fill out your lineup, I do like Mac Hollins. But yeah, otherwise, it's pretty much just Josh Jacobs and Devontae Adams here. Cowboys at Packers, your next one. Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, both guys are in the kind of one category, right? QB1s, WR1s, it may be perhaps in the lower end because, like you were saying, the Green Bay offense is still pretty good. I am curious to see, I suppose Jaire Alexander will just cover CeeDee Lamb for the most part, but I do wonder if they're going to move him around so much to get different matchups. If Alexander does cover Lamb, I wonder if that maybe opens things up for Dalton Schultz, who seems to be the next guy, like over Michael Gallup, but as a second pass-catching option, Dalton Schultz seems to be the guy here because he has a lot of target share in that Cowboys offense. Like in terms of other guys, target share for Dalton Schultz since Dak Prescott came back, there are not a lot of guys, including Travis Kelce, who get the ball as much as he does. So I like a start for Dalton Schultz today. I like him to finish in TE, like in a lower end TE1 category. The running backs, as we have said so many times this morning, the running backs are the most interesting thing about the Dallas Cowboys because Tony Pollard, you would think, probably should be the main guy there after Zeke has clearly, you know, lost a step. But because they're both going to be used, and Jerry Jones has said it like a million times in the past 2 weeks, Zeke is going to be used a lot. So if that's the case, I guess they're both RB2s this week.
Yeah, the Packers haven't been overly great against the run. Like, they've been okay, 13th. No Rashawn Gary, he's out for the rest of the season, defensive end, and no Eric Stokes, cornerback, also looks like he's going to be out. So the defense takes a little bit of a hit here. And, man, Tony Pollard, I just don't understand why they don't unleash Tony Pollard. We saw what he can do. Dak is just kind of Ezekiel Elliott is just kind of a plotter at this point. And you really want to see Tony Pollard just let him loose. I do agree they're probably both RB2s, Pollard of the higher end variety. My only concern is, are they going to cannibalize each other because Ezekiel Elliott is just going to get the high value touches like in and around the goal line if they get there. That's my concern, but I think Tony Pollard still does have a ton of value.
Yeah, like if you're in a pinch, I do think you can probably still start Tony Pollard. Like a lot, if you're injury concerns or what have you, and you're like, oh, should I start Tony Pollard over like AJ Dillon, who we'll talk about here in a second? But yeah, if that's your question, I think the answer is yes, because Tony Pollard has been pretty consistent and also pretty efficient with many of his touches. So I wouldn't mind starting Tony Pollard in today's game against the Packers. For the Packers themselves, Aaron Jones had the ankle injury in the loss to the Lions last week, but the x-rays on his ankle were negative. He is expected to suit up this weekend, which means that he's probably still in the RB2 range, mainly because he is the only viable option fantasy-wise, like offensively, essentially, on this entire team. AJ Dillon, we use the word plotter. I mean, it's not a diss against the guy. It's just he just moves slowly for whatever reason. He just is the guy they use to grind time out on the clock, for example, right? So if you have to start him, he's a flex play, but I really hope you don't have to. Alan Lazard is probably a WR3 at this point, not because he is bad, but because Aaron Rodgers looks terrible. And if you can, in any way, shape, or form, avoid starting Aaron Rodgers himself, I implore you to do so because he looks awful. But I mean, you might not have a choice at this point, especially if you're like in a 2QB league.
Yeah, an unpopular opinion here, probably. Like, I like Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback. I know this year it hasn't been fruitful at all. But what I will say is, and this was kind of evident last week against the against the Detroit Lions, like they get to first and goal on the one and they try and throw the ball instead of running AJ Dillon or running Aaron Jones. And then on the fourth and goal play from the one, they try and throw to an offensive lineman. Like, I think Matt LaFleur trying to compensate for the loss of Davante Adams has actually just tried to get too cute. And I think that's been part of the problem. Part is on Aaron Rodgers. That offensive line has just been not very good this year. They've had guys in and out, Elgton Jenkins, David Bakhtiari, and they've been banged up and kind of in and out of the lineup. They need to just do a better job of just getting the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands quickly. And I do like Alan Lazard as a play this week, but they're going up against this Cowboys defense who is ranked, they've allowed the 26th fewest points to quarterbacks, 30th fewest. They're second best against opposing running backs. They're middle of the pack against opposing wide receivers, and they're very tough against tight ends. Like, it's just not a good matchup either way, regardless who the quarterback is. Some are better than others, but yeah, Lazard, probably not starting Aaron Rodgers. I like Aaron Jones because I think he's going to get a ton of work. But yeah, it's not pretty in Green Bay right now.
No, absolutely not. I wonder if Aaron Rodgers has said anything to, like, cram it up your cram hole, LaFleur. I wonder if he's done that at all this year. I bet, yeah. I take the over on the dodgeball quotes. Let's go to a Cards at Rams. We kind of had the Cards conversation when we were doing the text line question because about Kyler Murray maybe not going to suit up, Colt McCoy, the guy who will suit up in his place if that's the case. So if that does happen, I think you can still say Hopkins as a WR1. Probably gives a little bit of more of a boost to Zach Ertz, I would think, because we like that we generally see backup QBs throw a little bit more to the tight ends as like a safety valve option, sort of, so to speak. But James Conner got most of, I think what you said, 70%+ of the team's snaps. Eno Benjamin, basically only a handcuff at this point. But James Conner, Hopkins, guys you can start, certainly. Rondale Moore, probably a WR3. But if Kyler Murray doesn't play, I think you don't take the chance on Rondale Moore if Murray doesn't play. For the Rams, again, the mess of a backfield continues. Kyren Williams was activated, so he is expected to see some work. I hope you have better options than him. They like him. So, I mean, I guess if you have him on your team, maybe just keep him on the bench for now until we see how things go, because the offensive line is not great. But apart from the running back, it's really just Cooper Kupp. And I'm not sure if the news about Matthew Stafford, he had the concussion. Is he playing today? Have we learned that?
It looks like it doesn't sound like they're expecting him to play. So it looks like the John Wolford, Colt McCoy matchup that we never knew that we needed.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, that's that. Cooper Kupp, you can still start because he's Cooper Kupp, but boy, maybe you stay away from everyone else in that game. Let's go to the Sunday Nighter, Chargers at Niners. And the Chargers look pretty good, so to speak, kind of, sort of, against the Falcons last weekend in the return of the off the bye. But still, Austin Eckler and Justin Herbert, RB1, QB1 for those guys. And we talked about Joshua Palmer. It's the Josh Palmer show, right? The Brampton native. He is the guy, right? So it's always cool to see Canadian players succeed. But with no Allen, no Williams, he's the guy. I think you can probably put him in there, even against a better Niners defense versus like the Falcons they played last week. Still probably like a low-end WR2, high-end WR3. And Gerald Everett, the other guy, I would say, Matt, as a TE1.
Yeah, you could sprinkle in a little bit of DeAndre Carter just because he offers that downfield presence that, you know, they don't have with Mike Williams not there. So I DeAndre Carter in a pinch, you might be able to start him. Like Gerald Everett, I like Gerald Everett as a player. It's just a tough matchup this week, but it's the barren landscape of the tight end position, which we've talked about so much. And, you know, the Keenan Allen thing is just so bizarre to me. They haven't put him on IR, so it feels like he gets close every week and then something happens, or I don't know. That is one of the more curious situations that I've seen all season. You know, I made the joke about Brian Robinson, but now we're in, like, I don't understand this at all territory with Keenan Allen.
Yeah, boy, he must be more seriously injured than we thought. Like, I know hamstring injuries linger, but maybe it's age plus the injuries. It's tough, right? I think he is, we were talking about busts and so on, probably one of the top ones of the season. 49ers, Jimmy G, you mentioned it, probably a QB2 because he has just so many options. I mean, we thought that about Derek Carr this year too, and look what happened there, but certainly looks like the 49ers offense moves a little more smoothly when it comes to offensive performance, but still QB2 territory for Jimmy G. Christian McCaffrey, obviously you're starting. Deebo Samuel, you're starting. Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle, I think you're obviously starting George Kittle as well because he's George Kittle, but Brandon Ayuk, WR3 territory for me. I mean, he got off to a slow start, but Jimmy G for to Brandon Ayuk, past 3 weeks, 21 catches, an average of 82 yards in a game. So if that's the case, he might be like even a low-end WR2. Maybe I still think WR3 territory, but like there's always upside there.
I'm a big fan of Brandon Ayuk. Like he's really turned things around, and after a slow start where we were talking about not starting him, he's in, you start him every week, and I think it's fairly safe. Like Deebo Samuel being back does kind of hurt his production a little bit, but I think this offense is still pretty decent with Jimmy G. Like Jimmy G in the regular season is fine. It's Jimmy G in the playoffs, like can't get to, you know, he can't get over that hump type thing. That's the only issue. But he has multiple touchdown passes the last few weeks. Ayuk does take a bit of a hit with Deebo, but I think you can start both of them pretty comfortably. The interesting one for me is George Kittle. Like we talk about Derwin James, like is he going to get locked up on George Kittle again? And that's going to be, you know, the matchup that ends up, you know, kind of hurting a lot of people in fantasy this week. I would still be tempering my expectations for George Kittle if he sees a lot of Derwin James.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. That's definitely a good point. And we also know if you're in a blocks, a league that rewards blocks, you're probably doing pretty well if you started DJ Moore and Kyle Pitts on Thursday, and you probably do pretty well if you start George Kittle in your points per game or blocks per game league. But other than that, yes, I think George Kittle, temper expectations with him if he does see safety Derwin James on the Chargers defense. And the last game on our slate, Commanders at Eagles on Monday Night Football. I think it's pretty safe to say most people expect that the Eagles will be 9-0 after Monday night, but Taylor Heinicke is still getting the nod again for a Washington Commanders team who does not have Carson Wentz. He's injured with the broken finger on his right hand, so he's not playing today. Taylor Heinicke is probably a QB too because he has a bit of a rushing floor and he's a bit of a gunslinger, throws the ball down the field, but you would think that does do wonders for Terry McLaurin, and generally speaking, it has. I think Terry McLaurin is probably a WR3 this week, Matt, because he's going to see some combination of Darius Slay and James Bradbury, and we've seen them do crazy things like in terms of shutting down receivers to some of the most talented wide receivers in the league. So I would say for this entire offense, and that includes Antonio Gibson, Brian Robinson, who are both flex plays, I would say maybe expect less than 7 points for everyone.
Yeah, of all the matchups, like Curtis Samuel against Avante Maddox is probably the most fruitful, and even that one is a little bit tough. Like they're the only guys I trust in this matchup, and they're both in tough. Here's the interesting one. I think that this game ends up being a bit of a blowout. So in order for Washington to keep up here, they're going to have to throw the ball. I like Antonio Gibson in PPR more than I like Brian Robinson this week. Mm-hmm. I know Washington at first is going to probably try and control the game a little bit on the ground, but I think that Antonio Gibson ends up having the better week just because I think they're going to use him more. No JD McKissick this week. And I think that's probably what ends up happening. So Antonio Gibson's like a pretty decent flex play in PPR and half PPR, I think, this week.
I think you're right too. I think again, like the floor is pretty low and the ceiling is low as well. But still, I for a Monday night option against the only undefeated team left in the NFL, all things considered, it is not a bad play, even if you are starting the Philadelphia defense, I would say, right? And on the Eagles side of things, I mean, like, you don't need us to tell you to start any of A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert, or certainly Jalen Hurts, who is the QB3 overall. He is absolutely fantastic. 6 rushing touchdowns, leads all NFL quarterbacks, top 5 rushing yards per game. He's terrific. A neutral matchup, I would say, against the Commanders defense. They have not yet allowed a rushing touchdown to a quarterback, so maybe that changes if you're looking for a nice prop play on Monday night. But apart from those guys, like Devontae Smith is the only other guy who I'm curious to see how he does this week, just if only because he had not so great week the previous time out. But even so, WR2 for old Devonta.
Yeah, it's a pass funnel defense for the Commanders. They're not a great defense. They've had some games where you look and go, wow, like they're kind of turning a corner here. And then you're like, nah, no, they're not very good. Dallas Goedert's in for a tough matchup. Washington has actually allowed the fewest points per game to opposing tight ends, which I was really surprised at. But they're middle of the pack against quarterbacks. They're pretty good against running backs, but against wide receivers, they've allowed the eighth most. I like Devontae Smith. I like A.J. Brown. You're going to start Dallas Goedert because he does kind of feel like he's matchup-proof. He's been that good.
Yeah.
It's the usual suspects here for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, we expect him to go to 9-0, and that also does it for our start sits here on the Fantasy Show. Text us at 590-590. Name and location on the People's Text line. We'll answer your questions, the rest of them, in the next 10-15 minutes or so. But thanks for listening to the Fantasy Show. Good luck this week on the Sportsnet Radio Network.